Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch is back. I'm so excited. Dan Lynch is back, and we're going to be talking about telephony in the cloud. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch, episode 447, recorded August 24th, 2017, Kazoo Update. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by the Amazon EC2 container service from AWS. Deploy Docker apps to the cloud without worrying about installing, updating, operating, or scaling container infrastructure. Learn how developers are deploying scalable apps at ecs.aws today. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at SunEdge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might want to download right after this show and play with. I am so pleased that today, joining us once again after a multi-year absence, my co-host today, Dan Lynch. Dan Lynch, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to be back. It's been 2 years I worked out, almost exactly 2 years since I called in. I've been away sorting out some health problems, but thankfully I'm back now, and it's great to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, and where are you speaking to us from?
I am, I'm actually in a different location to where I used to record, but I'm still about 20 minutes outside the center of Liverpool in the UK. I'm on the banks of the the River Mersey, if anyone knows that.
and where the Beatles came from, of course, which everybody thinks of when they think of Liverpool. Well, all of us old people think of, right? People, kids these days, who knows what Liverpool is, right? So awesome, awesome. And I'm so happy that you got to be here for this show, because this show is about the 2600 Hertz project and Kazoo. And oddly enough, we had shows in 2011 and 2012 about this, which is what, five years ago now at least, right? And you were the co-host or host on both of those shows.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, I haven't followed the project that closely in the last 5 years, so it'd be good to find out what's happened. And I would be lying if I said I could remember absolutely everything that happened in those shows by now. But I'm sure we'll learn what's happened to the project, and it's really good to catch up with them again and find out how it's going.
Well, I'm only aware of what happened 5 years ago in those shows because I listened to them in the last couple of days. So, and I like you, I have not really been following the project, but I hear a lot of cool stuff has been changing in 5 years. Obviously, any project that we talk to that's had 5 years of history now is very different. We've had a number of shows in the last year or so that's been like that, where we go back and revisit. And I'm speaking to you. If anybody recognizes this blank wall behind me. Again, I'm in my home in Beaverton, Oregon, where just 3 days ago I got to see that wonderful eclipse in Salem, Oregon. Almost 2 minutes of total eclipse, and that was a lifetime event. That was awesome. Absolutely cool. So let's talk about what we're going to talk about today. We're going to bring on, in a few moments, Darren Schreiber and Carl Anderson, who are representing the 2600 Hertz project. And what we're going to be talking about is telephony in the cloud. So in other words, being able to do voice over IP calls, being able to send SMS messages, being able to have like a switchboards where people call in and they can press 3 to go to this kind of a person or whatever, that sort of thing. And this project's been around for a while, and it's based on a bunch of technologies, including FreeSwitch, which we also had on the show many, many years ago, and things like that. What can you tell us about 2600 Hertz and Kazoo, their main product?
Well, I've been actually doing a bit of research today. For once in my life, I've tried to prepare properly, and I've been doing a bit of research today. It's a big change in area, obviously. I mean, they say a week's a long time in politics, in software, and particularly anything connected to the web. That's like a millennia of time for 5 years. But things have changed a lot, and I think the mobile the growth of apps and the mobile architectures and so on is something that we're going to talk about today, in fact, because that's something I know that has impacted 2600 Hertz and the related projects. So it'd be good to find out about that as well.
Yes, absolutely. But before we do that, we do have an important message to bring up, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by the Amazon EC2 Container Service from Amazon Web Services. Developers love Docker containers because they give applications portability and consistency all the way from your laptop to production. But things can get complicated fast when time comes to deploy, manage, scale, and secure containerized apps in the cloud. Amazon EC2 Container Services make it easy to run Docker apps in production. Installing, updating, and operating and scaling your infrastructure happens automatically. Using simple API calls, you can launch and stop Docker-enabled applications, query the state of your cluster, and natively integrate with powerful AWS services like security groups, elastic load balancing, EBS volumes, and more. Best of all, you only pay for the AWS compute and storage resources you use. With Amazon EC2 Container Service, you can focus on building apps, not spending time deploying, scaling, and managing your container infrastructure. It's time to get back to what you do best. Learn more about the Amazon EC2 Container Service at ecs.aws today. That's ecs.aws. And we thank them for their support of Floss Weekly. And let's go ahead and bring on our guests. Let's bring on Darren Scheiber. Darren, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. I am super happy to be back. And it's actually good to see you guys. And I'm glad you're back as well, Dan. So that's awesome. It's kind of a treat that you're coming back right to pick up sort of where you left off a little bit there. So that's cool. And we're really happy to talk about what's gone on in the last five plus years. So thanks for having us.
And Darren, where are you speaking to us from?
I am ironically sitting in one of our data centers conference rooms in Secaucus, New Jersey. It's about 4 miles outside of New York City. And just kind of worked out that this was the best spot to do the show today. So that's where I am. And then, so that's where I'm joining you from.
Cool. Let's also bring on Carl Anderson. Carl, welcome back to the show.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. Pleasure to be back.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking to you guys from our main office here in San Francisco.
San Francisco. How's the weather there?
At the moment, it's a little cold, overcast, but it's San Francisco. Give it a pop.
That's normal. That's normal there, yes. Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's start with Darren. What problem am I solving when I'm reaching for a kazoo?
That's a great question. So kazoo is kind of like a Swiss Army knife for communications platforms. The main draw has generally been folks who are offering, selling, or bundling communication services to customers that are businesses primarily. There are some other types of customers that are out there who do, you know, residential or mobile, but the main folks seem to be people who are replacing business phone systems or conference bridge systems or video chat systems or messaging systems, and they want to tie them together with something that's familiar to end users and scales. So the big key of the project is to make sure that we can support, you know, millions of phones on a single platform, not just a few thousand or a few hundred thousand.
And how did this project get started?
That's a good one. So we started the project. I joined the FreeSwitch community about 12 years ago when I heard about FreeSwitch. I had always been actually an Asterix enthusiast. And at some point, one of the main contributors of Asterix decided he wanted to rewrite it to try and improve its scalability and its capabilities. And his name was Anthony Minicelli, and he started FreeSwitch, and I heard about it very early on. And I decided that one of the big things that would improve adoption of FreeSwitch was if it had a front-end user interface on it. And then as we were starting to kind of build that just for fun, we started noticing a trend where a lot of the questions people were asking were about how do I set up, you know, hundreds of these servers, not just one server. And we decided that there seems to be some sort of opportunity for a big cluster of media servers or of SIP servers and WebRTC servers and so on and so forth. And we said, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to try and build something that's even bigger than just a front end user interface. Maybe there's an opportunity to build a super scalable distributed system. And we kind of looked at, like, if you look at Google's model, they took a lot of commodity hardware and figured out how to just keep chaining it together forever so that they could keep storing more and more data, but still search and have redundancy and boxes go up and down, but keep the actual platform very inexpensive, even though it's very powerful. Nobody had really done that for sort of a media platform, and that's kind of what we were looking to do, is how do we do a similar inexpensive, commoditized, distributed communications platform. And people were asking for it, you know, in the chat channels or in the forums. So we decided to give this project a shot. And here we are 8 years later after we quit our jobs and decided to do this full time.
So how did you make that work?
If you give away software.
But if you give away software, how do you make your money?
So in order to fund the project, we got kind of lucky early on. We got some corporate sponsors who really wanted to see this get built in a certain way, and they wanted it done quickly, and they understood that it took effort, and they already had established brand names, so they didn't really they weren't so concerned about protecting the intellectual property, because they already, the thing that they're more interested in is protecting their intellectual property is protecting their brand. It's not so much the software. So they sponsored a good portion of the early first year or two. And we kind of used that opportunity to build a base platform. And ironically, we actually built a sample user interface. And we just thought it would show people what you could do with the platform. Because even after we got a lot of the complicated things working, I don't think most people understood what to do with it. We had always expected people to build their own user interface on top. And when we built the sample interface, people liked it so much they kept trying to buy it, even though it was free. And we said, well, I mean, if people keep wanting to pay us to run this and maintain it, we should probably take that money and use it toward the project. And we swore that we would never run a hosting company. We would always make them do their own hosting. And then we kind of kept running into people who didn't know Linux and didn't know how to do their own hosting. So then we started doing hosting as well. And just all of a sudden, we kind of became an operator of a platform as well, and we took the funds from doing that to try and make it better, and we also had sponsors, and we had there was just a lot of interest kind of coming from all directions. So that's kind of how we sort of funded the project. It wasn't very well structured. I mean, literally, if you came to us and asked, you know, what you could buy, we'd kind of turn back to you and say, well, what's your budget and what do you want to buy? Like, we didn't really have a product line. And we just kind of went either where the money was or where the interest was, or, you know, where we thought was a good idea. I think the main thing that we did in the project is we stuck to three pillars the entire way through of what we really wanted to achieve. And it was the things that we saw people struggle with or that we thought were cutting edge, and not so much struggle with, but just we're reinventing the same thing over and over and over, the same basic building blocks. So one of the very first things was configuration APIs. You know, how do you store settings that tell how a phone system works across multiple clients, across multiple countries? And then the second thing was, how do you do fancy things when calls are in progress, like to control them? You know, you call these days a menu or an IVR, and sometimes you can do things like check your account balance or, speech to text kind of things. But those are interactive. They you know, reach out to other business systems and databases to get that data, and they're programmable in order to achieve that. And then the third thing is this sort of merging of, you know, it's not just voice over IP anymore. It's more like voice meets the web. And so people are constantly trying to merge web software or even client software that sits on your desktop computer with the activities that are happening on the phone. So that could be as simple as a caller ID lookup that then pulls a Salesforce record up to tell you who's calling, or something more sophisticated like a supervisor who in a chat channel can see what the agents are doing in Slack, even though it's telling them what's happening on the phone system. There's been kind of this merging of the technologies, and people keep coming up with really creative ways to mix and match. I mean, even Carl, at one of our demos, he wired up touch tones to control the thermostat using a motor. And we've had people do little robots with, call actions that, you know, drive around based on what you push. And people are doing all sorts of crazy stuff in terms of integrating any sort of other electronics or other software with the communication systems. So we called it configuration APIs, call control, and real-time eventing. Those were the three sort of pillars that we tried to stick to in whatever work we did take on. And that has proven to be pretty successful.
Wow. Well, we're almost out of time, so I'm glad you guys came on today. No, just kidding.
Sorry.
I love long answers like that. It's like I get to think for a while. I get to read the chat room. I get to I get to chat with Dan on the back channel. We have a live chat room today, as we always do. And Epony or Epony, I never know how to pronounce his or her name, asked me, what codecs are primarily supported, and does it inherit from FreeSwitch, or is it independent, and how close is it tracking the codes from FreeSwitch? I think there's probably more of a Carl question, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So as far as the specifics of the question goes, we can do any codec that FreeSwitch can do because we use FreeSwitch as our media engine. What Kazoo actually does, and this kind of dovetails a little bit into what Darren was talking about, and probably why the project attracts so much attention, is when you set out to build any kind of solution, like even that thermostat thing he was talking about, everybody has to solve the same technical problem in order to scale it and make it robust. So that's not a unique solution. It's what you build on top of it. And how much time do you want to spend building the core infrastructure to support that versus building the solution? And so Kazoo gives you that core infrastructure out of the box and gives you APIs so you can easily connect up and run whatever this and build whatever your specific solution is. But we take advantage of open source projects like FreeSwitch and Chameleo and AMQP in order to do the same thing for our core projects. So anything that FreeSwitch can do, technically Kazoo can do, and we just expose it as a much higher business level logic, and we take care of the clustering of knowing where a call is, routing the call, handling the failover, all the stuff that you would otherwise have to cookie cutter. And it's funny because every time we walk into anybody who's trying to build a solution, they always end up building the exact same or going through the exact same process of starting with a server, proving it works, then scaling it in exactly the same way. And so with something like Kazoo, you can just sidestep that and stay focused on what you actually want to be doing and have fun with the actual thing you're trying to build.
Yeah, it sounds great. One of the things I wanted to ask about is something I've been asked a lot, actually, in the kind of build up to this show, and people are talking about it in the IRC channel right now, is how the components kind of fit together, and how, you know, if you could give us a kind of overview, I suppose, of how these components build together. So people are saying to me things like, what's Kazoo? Is it a competitor for FreeSwitch or Asterisk or anything? And I think it'd be a good idea to try and, I suppose, just, you know, flesh that out if we can and kind of. So I'm going to pick on you again, I'm afraid, Carl. But do you fancy telling us a bit about that, about how this kind of stack works and how it fits together?
Oh, absolutely. The problem is I could talk about it all day, so let me try and keep it concise.
Okay.
So at its core, Kazoo, the actual Kazoo project itself, is the orchestrating layer that is controlling individual components or resources. So, for instance, your calls come through Chameleo. Chameleo decides where to route them. Kazoo's actually engaged in that decision. We kind of inform Chameleo what the status of the cluster looks like, some SIP credential stuff. Then that call will get distributed to a random pool of FreeSwitch servers. And those FreeSwitch servers will go back to Kazoo and say, I've got this call. What would you like me to do with it? Kazoo has a low-level driver that is responsible for tracking the call and abstracting all of the FreeSwitch or other applications that could live down there. Right now, we only have support for the FreeSwitch media server, but you know, you could have Asterisk down there. You could have other solutions within your resource pool that provide, for instance, perhaps conferencing support or some other support that you find is more efficient outside of FreeSwitch. But once you go through that abstraction layer, it then goes up to the high-level business logic layer where we start issuing API requests, or we look at the configuration you've preloaded into the system and we operate against that. All of that data we store in Couch or Big Couch, which is a NoSQL distributed database. And all of these components communicate with themselves on a message bus called AMQP. That message bus requires a broker, and the broker that we run is called RabbitMQ. So if you, for instance, wanted to write an application that took over some of the high-level business logic we do. For instance, we have an application called Conferences that runs conferences, and perhaps you'd rather implement it in a different way. You could write it, that application in any language that you'd like, connect into the AMQP message bus. Then when the call comes through Camilio, hits the free switch server, the request goes through the low-level abstraction, you'll simply get a request saying, hey, this guy wants a conference. Do you want to allow it? Yes, no. And we take care of all the rest of the business of, is that call going to be on the same box as the rest of the people that are coming into this conference? You know, if that box fails, do we need to fail over to another one? And all the aspects around keeping the cluster up.
That's something I was actually going to ask about, is the kind of load balancing stuff that you've got going on here, because I imagine that's a real killer feature for people who want to know that their, you know, telephony system's not going to crash if they get too many calls or something. So it's Kazoo that does all, and in conjunction with Camilo, does the kind of provisioning of all that then.
Right. Well, and it's from an architectural standpoint. So from day one, we've always work to eliminate any single point of failure. So, and it's funny too, little things crop up, like the provisioner becomes a single point of failure, if perhaps you push out the wrong config file to all your phones. So it's a difficult thing to do, but as far as the architecture goes, we actually don't have a single point of failure anywhere in it, and that gives us the robustness that people expect in the telecom environment. Because of that, we don't have any special nodes, and there's no like master node in the system. The system can be broken up into segments we call zones, and each zone can operate independently. So generally speaking, we deploy a zone into a data center, and if the if something's going wrong, the general solution that we deploy is turn off that data center, because the rest of the cluster is flexible and elastic enough just to pick up the load and adapt. We expect anything to fail at any time, and the cluster's designed to handle that. So that's what our operations staff tends to do. If something's not doing what it needs to do, just turn it off, because then it's not causing a problem.
I like that approach. I mean, I wouldn't call myself a kind of a hardcore sysadmin, but I think we've all experienced when things stop working. That can be really dramatic. So it's great to be able to respond to that kind of stuff. I noticed when I was looking into the project that it's written in Erlang. Can you give us any idea what kind of led that decision to write it in Erlang, and how does that affect how the project works?
Sure. So Erlang was just a really natural choice for us. The problem domain that we're operating in, actually Erlang is originally written for the telecom environment for mass distributed soft real-time systems, which is what we're doing with Kazoo. So what Erlang lets us do, though, is lets us write lots of individual workers and actors that can operate independently, but communicate naturally through the language with each other. And then if any of the individual workers has a problem, they will die. Supervisors in the language will then restart them and restore services. So the system is extremely robust even when there's errors. And of course, we do everything we can to keep the errors out of the system, but they do happen from time to time. And Erlang will just automatically, effectively, keep the system up. In addition to that, the way that you tend to write Erlang leads to some dense ability to write dense logic into the system, but do so in a clean way, so that we hope that it encourages contributors, because although a lot of people complain about the Erlang syntax, I think that if you go look through our code, it's very hackable. You can kind of understand what's going on, and it's driven partly because of the language. It kind of forces functional deconstruction and gives you easy readable little functions that do very simple things, and you can add your own little logic in there, and you can get a foothold in and then start to expand into the rest of the system and start making some big contributions. And like I say, that's just what we write our apps in. It just works really nicely for this problem. But you're not limited to that. If you can connect to the AMQP message bus, then you can write it in any language you'd like. Our REST APIs or our HTTP APIs, right? That's pretty common for people to be able to consume from, and you can even do real-time call control through the HTTP APIs. So, you're not limited by any stretch by the Erlang. The Erlang's just a good choice for the core. We try to choose the the best solution for the particular problems, Camellio, FreeSwitch, Big Cow, ChainQP, Erlang, and it just so happened that was one of them.
And you actually answered something else I was going to ask there, which is, do I need to know Erlang to get involved? Now, I suppose if I was going to actually hack on Kazoo itself, I would need to do that in Erlang. But as you said, I could program in any language I like and link in with, say, the REST APIs or any of the other links that you've got there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and we have a very extensive API set on the HTTP. I believe we have over 150 endpoints, if I'm not mistaken, in that API. So you can actually customize a Kazoo system so that it's nearly unrecognizable from another Kazoo deployment because we have so much capability in that API set. And we cover more than just and it's a little unusual for a project like this, but we cover more than just call, control, and setup. There's APIs in there that start letting you do some simple billing, debugging, self-service debugging is a big one that we always focus on. We want you to be able to go in, inspect the system. If you have a minor knowledge of what's going on, you can kind of identify problems. And if you're more advanced users, perhaps you can pull down a SIP ladder diagram. So the entire tool set around not just keeping the system up, but the entire solution you're trying to build is empowered by those APIs.
Excellent. And that leads me into kind of another topic that I wanted to discuss as well. Obviously, this is an open source project, and all open source projects kind of live and die by their community, I suppose. So you can probably guess what I'm going to ask. But what does the community look like? How active is it? How big is it? How's that changed in the last few years as well? I'm not specifically putting this at any one person. I don't know if Carl wants to have a break and Darren could answer it, but it's up to
sure,
you guys.
I could start and then I could hand it over to Darren. From a technical standpoint, we actually have picked up quite a lot of Erlang contributors. I think a lot of people have learned Erlang because of our project, which I'm pretty proud of. So we've got a lot of people who contribute in ways with just documentation. A lot of our documentation is driven through Markdown files on the GitHub project. Once we opened that up, that gave an avenue to a lot of people who would follow the files, find little things here or there, or discover something that we hadn't documented just yet, and they contributed that back. And being in such a number of different projects like Camellio and FreeSwitch, we have some extensive configuration for those particular services. And so people have coming out of the FreeSwitch world or coming from Camellio who are converting to a Kazoo will either drop us a line saying, I'd like to add this feature into Camellio because, I know how to do that so that it plays nicely with Kazoo. Or, hey, have you guys thought about doing it this way instead? Because, I've deployed a Camellio proxy using this rather than that. So I think as the project has definitely gotten a lot more popular, a lot more people have found a lot more ways to contribute because we have quite a number of repos there, which gives a lot more people avenues into the project.
And I'll also dovetail on that. The community used to be very active on Google Groups, and one of the problems we had on that is it's really not a very good tool for kind of categorized posting all day long. It's convenient for email-based posting, like a mailing list, but the web interface is not attractive. Not everyone wants to do everything via email. So we recently moved to a new forum software, and in the process, we found a way to import all the old Google Groups chats, and I didn't even realize myself how active they had been. And we have about 20,000 posts over the last few years, and the posts are pretty technical. I think in a lot of VoIP projects, there's folks who are very much beginners, and our project, for some reason, has attracted folks who are a little more scholarly. They seem to be asking some pretty advanced questions. Like a common question we'll get is, how do I scale this across three data centers and ensure that latency is not a problem and deal with encryption, right? So they don't come in and ask simple questions. We seem to attract folks who are doing some fairly sophisticated things. And one of the other things that happened recently is we've done a conference every year called KazooCon, and it's been a kind of mind meld of folks who are out there building projects. And we're always impressed where people come from. You asked me in the beginning, how do we sort of fund the project? Almost everything we do is US-based, or at least it was until about a year or two ago. So we just kind of assumed most of our users were in the US because that's the people we interacted with every day. And come to find out that we actually have a presence, it seems, in Russia, in multiple countries in Europe, in Africa, in Australia, in New Zealand. And the people kind of came out of the woodwork. Ironically, we started offering a couple licensed modules that were like add-ons that just made life easier. It was the first time we had tried that, and we thought we would scare all the open source people away. And in fact, it was the opposite. We found that a ton of people wanted to find a way to support the project, didn't know how to, and were more than happy to provide both some funding as well as they had thousands and thousands of customers that were using the product on a daily basis. And so we would estimate today, if I had to put a rough number on it, so today under management, under folks who pay us for support services, we manage about 250,000 phones. It's a little bit higher than that. But in terms of the open source community, I would be surprised if it was any less than about 500,000 phones now using the software somewhere out there. So it's gotten pretty big. Of course, 500,000 versus the world's population, everyone having a phone, it's tiny. But for a product that's grown basically organically, it's been an upward trajectory for quite a while now.
And have you had any telecoms providers, any kind of telecoms companies come to you to talk about possibly getting involved?
We do. You can find some of them on Google if you look for our name, but they actually don't like talking about us because they kind of want to keep it a secret. They're happy to pay the money. It's real weird. They're happy to pay the money and have it be open source, but they don't want us to talk about it. Again, they're very protective of their brand name, we've learned, like super protective. I guess because in the telecoms, kind of this black box industry, and it always has been. So most people buy because they've heard the name Verizon and heard it was good. You know, they have no idea how many cell towers Verizon has, what frequencies they operate on, what phones are. I mean, they just, it's too complicated. They don't get into that. I think the providers know this, and so they protect their brand pretty closely. But I would say that we're in some decent sized providers at this point who are using our stuff, and that is growing.
And if I could, I was just going to say too, I think there's a dovetail to that as well. I think traditionally they've gotten boxed solutions, and if everybody had this boxed solution, it's really hard for them to compete. And I would say that the market has shifted to a much more flexible kind of a deployment, and I don't know that they're used to that yet and don't understand that what they're actually acquiring here is the capability to build solutions, not necessarily the final solution, because that's how they've always operated. And it'll be interesting to see what they do once they have this capability. And we see a couple of them starting to play with some of these. Once they have it in, they say, oh, look, I could do that. And you can see the light turn on every now and again. So we'll just have to see what happens.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you guys about was, obviously, we talked at the top of the show about the fact that it was 2012 last time I think we spoke. So obviously that's a quite a chunk of time in certainly in technology terms. So what's changed in the last 5 years? What are the big developments that you'd like to tell us about, I suppose?
Carl, you want to start? There's a lot in 5 years. There's been a lot of changes.
Not sure exactly where to start. Yeah, we've done a tremendous amount. I was going to say one of the big ones just recently here is we shifted. So I guess last time we spoke, we were probably on version 2 or something like that of the core. So the core is now up to version 4.0. Version 4.1 is just launching stable now. And since that time, we have expanded it considerably with a lot more functionality, a lot more integrations, for instance, connectors into AWS and Google Drive, and a lot more. Focused around some of the VLF stability and reliability and enhancements there, which would be like the indicators on the phone telling you when someone's using it, which, when you're running across multiple data centers, if you lose connection between data centers and the call was on the other side, it's pretty tricky to try and make sure that you turn off the light that you no longer know the status of the call about. So that was a big one that we've pushed out.
I'm going to hijack Carl here. I think some of the high level that Carl's alluding to is the last time you guys interviewed us, It was a challenge to keep the software running. It was not very stable. So when he talks about the stability problems, there were memory leaks. There, you would have to restart it periodically. And considering that the whole point of the software was supposed to be to make your life easier, I would argue that we weren't doing a very good job at that. We had a lot of features, so it was still attractive to a lot of people, which is why it was still a successful project. But the stability he's referring to has been a chronic challenge to find and squash every single bug on a system that's super busy all day with thousands and thousands of people using it. And so when he talks about the improvement to the core, from 2.0 to 3.0, 3.0 was a point at where the system became much, much more stable and was really a professional or enterprise-grade switch. And 4.0 is where we reached kind of feature parity with a lot of the stuff that's out there, and also have now made it so that on like two or three servers, I mean, you can get the redundancy, but you can also put, you know, 10, 20, 30, maybe even 50,000 customers on there, and it's going to scale with a much smaller footprint. It's going to you could probably set it up and it'll run for a year or two, and you know, as long as nobody does anything nasty, it should just be fine. So the stability increases have been significant, as have the feature improvements. Carl, I hijacked you, but I think that's kind of what you were trying to summarize.
Yeah, no. I know, I'm glad I was getting a little into the weeds there because, you know, from a technical standpoint, I immediately see bullet points when someone asks me, you know, what have we been doing? But that's absolutely true. And, you know, the more popular the project gets, the more people that get on it, and the more optimized the core becomes. And so 4.0 is really a big milestone for us and a tremendous advancement for the entire project. And we're just really excited about it. And I think I don't know if Darren wants to talk about the transition from Kazoo UI to Monster UI as well right now.
Yeah, so you have a very funny, actually, screenshot of the previous Floss interview we did. When you pull up like the YouTube or the video, the very first thing that shows up on the frozen screen, if you're not playing it, is our old on-off buttons for what we were calling the App Store. The project was always supposed to be a base layer, and then people built apps on top of it. And we knew that. But the App Store that you guys actually show in your video is terrible. It was a first rev, and it was not.
Oh dear.
We kind of put it there because we wanted people to know that we were hoping to go in that direction. I guess we kind of hoped people might contribute parts to it too to help speed it along. At some point, it became clear that we needed to redo it, and we did. And actually, at the end of this year, we hopefully will have a fully functioning, full App Store, and that App Store. Will actually allow people to contribute both UI and backend applications, and then either give it away for free, distribute it, or sell it on there, or sell upgrades, whatever they want to do. But in order to facilitate that, one of the interesting things we learned, even if it's open source and it's community, there's still a kind of marketing-esque factor. People don't want to use a product that looks like there's a ton left to do. And so we put a lot of work in building some base applications. And we knew that anybody who got told that there was an App Store in our product and then only saw five apps, it doesn't really seem like an App Store. There's only five apps. So when we last talked to you, there were five apps. That's all we had. Today, we're approaching 40. And I would expect that by the end of the year, we'll probably be at closer to 50 or 60. And that development has been quite rapid. We went from about four or five to about 10 and then kind of hung out there while we worked on some of the stability issues. And then now that we're wrapping up the stability issues, we've been able to go back to features, and those features are happening very quickly. So as an example, when what we call an app, I know a lot of people think on their cell phone like an app is, you know, a game or something. For us, a telecom app is often a whole industry. So it used to be that, for example, if you wanted to run a conference bridge service where people can call in and enter a PIN and talk to other people live, that was very expensive equipment, and you would have to pay a lot of money for that. And that's probably all you would offer, right? You might also offer, you know, call recording or some other service. So these 40, 50, 60 apps, they're whole industries that we've now consolidated down into this platform. And it's, you know, everything from audio and video conferencing to PBX services to transcription stuff is in there a little bit. There's voicemail, faxing. I mean, there's mobile services. You can be a mobile carrier now. You can actually piggyback off wholesale wireless towers and then sell your own actual mobile phone service, not an over-the-top service, but where you actually ship a SIM card to someone, they pop it into an iPhone, and you're their service provider. So that's an app to us. That's one app. So there's a tremendous amount of functionality in there now. And so when Carl talks about how we've sort of redone the user interface, we took a deep look at how do we make that more attractive and which apps do we need to build. And we're kind of at the tail end of building the number of apps that we had anticipated before we start hoping to try and drum up interest from other folks who want to contribute to it as well.
Mm. And I expect something that everybody seems to want these days is video conferencing and online meetings and all that kind of stuff. I know video might be a dirty word in this kind of conversation. I'm not sure, but is video conferencing something that you've looked at or maybe looked to integrate in some way? I imagine it adds a lot of complexity to the situation.
So we can thank the FreeSwitch guys for that. They really have done the heavy lifting on adding video transcoding to the stack, which is one of the big challenges. Mm-hmm. So we've done some work on the WebRTC front or on the client side or just on configuration side to expose that stuff. And we've actually done a bunch of work on the hardware side. Video transcoding is expensive still on the CPU. And we actually looked for a solution where we could buy servers that would be inexpensive that could do this, and we couldn't find any that we liked. So we've actually been on a project where we've decided to 3D print our own server enclosures. And we can now take stock motherboards and put them in our data centers. And it basically cuts the price into about a third for the capital expenditure on the equipment. But it also lets us not be locked into any sort of proprietary solution. So if next month a new board comes out, we can just start using it. That combined with the distributed architecture means that actually a lot of those challenges kind of accidentally but inherently already got solved, where as you scale up a video platform, you just throw more hardware at it. And since we have a cheap solution to throw hardware at it, all the phone and the other technologies are already there. And the FreeSwitch team has done a tremendous job making sure that the media services are reliable for video as well. So that actually, it is complex. And it's also done, so you can use it.
That's good.
And it's pretty reliable, and it's we use it every day for our stand-ups with our team. We have a company meeting because a lot of our team is remote, and so we have a company meeting every week on Thursdays at 10 o'clock. We have about 20 to 30 people on that bridge doing video chats, it's good. It's really fun, and it's a really great way to communicate. And I think the ability to customize the software however you want is really neat. And it's just not something you find with like a WebEx or a out of the box product.
Hmm. Well, jumping in there. No, that's okay. No, I realize you just said that you 3D print your own server enclosures, and you mentioned before about linking robots to these things. So it's probably a lot easier if I just ask you what you haven't done. It's going to be a lot quicker. What you haven't done with the product yet?
You can blame Carl because we definitely have bent the boundaries on what an average software company does. We haven't built a car wash yet. Oh wait, Carl has a car wash. Oh, never mind, I forgot.
It's only a matter of time, surely.
We've still been restricted to the planet. We haven't quite gotten to the International Space Station yet.
Carl actually had his own little idea for building like a Zipcar type service. He had figured out how to put GPS transponders on cars and turn them on and off remotely, but he couldn't quite figure out how to finance buying a whole bunch of cars, so he gave up on that one.
Yeah,
so I think Carl gets all the credit for the crazy ideas. I just sit here and say, oh, that sounds like a good idea. We should do it.
Good. I mean, it sounds like a good culture to work in as well.
Well, and we tried, again, if you look at even companies, I don't want to compare us with this company because it seems egotistical, but I'm going to anyway. One of the things that Apple did that really made them successful is they owned every piece of the experience. And one of the things that really stinks about telecom is everybody historically has done a very fractured little piece of the puzzle, and then companies were stuck trying to glue it all together, and it just never worked very well. So you wouldn't believe some of the duct tape that currently holds together our public infrastructure when it comes to communication systems. I mean, it's really bad. And we used to think that it was just the small providers who duct taped their stuff together. And then we talked to some of these huge companies, and I was blown away when I found out one of these companies never thought they would go international. So all their phone numbers don't have a country code on it, and they can never change that. Just the decisions that got made, it was clear that a lot of this stuff was duct taped together. So we've really prided ourselves on how do we solve the entire solution so you have a turnkey telco in a box And that includes hardware. How do you go and install? You go to a data center and you install the hardware, you install the software, and you're up and running within a day. That was our goal. We actually wanted the whole thing to be automated. And we pretty much hit that stride this year. In fact, one of the reasons I'm at this data center here in New Jersey is I'm putting the finishing touches on our final kind of cookie cutter design for the hardware. So we're pretty at this point. You could say I want to go expand in Columbia and give us a rack in a data center, and we'd probably be up and running within a week. And that's in full. So it's very, very easy to scale now, and it's very easy to go into other countries, and it's very easy to go into other data centers, and it's very easy to still be very low cost and optimize this.
I'd say too that it's. This is something that we've always been passionate about. I think that we carry that all the way through. And anytime we run into a problem that's, not getting us where we want to go, it's something we have to solve, that we're not just going to stop there. So when the hardware and the video started launching and the hardware started becoming the problem, and we wanted to deploy this onto more servers, but getting servers is expensive, right? That's a problem we got to solve to make the software good, because there's an end goal trying to get the experience where we expect it to be. Whatever the problem comes up, we're going to solve it.
Excellent. So one thing we haven't actually talked about yet, which I'm really interested in from looking through your website and so on, is how the kind of mobile architectures and stuff affect all this. Because I noticed you've got 2600 hertz mobile now. So what is that, and how does it work?
So we rent wholesale time for data, voice, and SMS, MMS from a well-known tier one wireless provider. We actually hope to have two of them under our belt pretty soon. And they give us access to their provisioning systems, and we actually have our equipment directly linked now in their data centers. So when you make a phone call, so basically what happens is, and we now have permission to access their systems and activate SIM cards, which you then put in your mobile device, when you activate them, they basically tell their cell towers to honor authentication and service requests from those phones with those SIM cards. Except every time you use the phone, they bounce the voice signal to us to process. They don't actually do any of the processing. So effectively, the call goes from your mobile handset to the cell tower to the core network that they have. But instead of it going to the person you dialed, it goes to us. And they just blindly hand every call off to us to go deal with. And that lets us sit in the middle and add features like call recording or monitoring who's on the phone, even if you're out of the office, or allowing you to set multiple identities. So you have two different or three different caller IDs, like a work caller ID and a personal caller ID. We can do unified voicemail. You can have your phone number be the same on your laptop as it is on your cell phone, as it is on your desk phone. There's all sorts of features that we get out of that. But more interesting, we also get hooked into the billing and the reporting pieces. So you can set your own prices. You can come up with strategies to, set yourself aside, in a competitive manner. And we, again, like Carl said earlier with the turnkey, and if there's a problem, solve it. We've seen a lot of these companies, they're called MVNOs, try and do this, and they don't really know all the technology. So we wanted to make a turnkey solution for that as well, where tomorrow, if you decided that you wanted to be your own mobile phone carrier, if we wanted to do Dan's awesome mobile service, you could.
How did you know?
Exactly.
How did you know? That was in my plans for tomorrow.
You can decide that it's going to be a $200 a month plan if you want. You can decide to give it away for free and pick up the cost and maybe sponsor it with advertising. I don't know. You can come up with whatever business or financial model you want, and then basically, you just have to deal with handling the activations and the SIM cards, and then the service itself can traverse through whatever you've programmed in the system. So so you become an actual mobile phone carrier, with the only thing you're not doing is going and setting up the physical wireless towers.
Well, and if I could, too, just to make sure that it's clear as well, because I don't know that it was fully expressed, but we are not in the data channel. When you do this, right, you are using the actual voice channel on the cell phone tower. So if you put it over the top app or do this in another approach, you're actually getting best effort service to deliver the voice. Whereas with what we're doing by connecting directly into the core of these switches, we are on the guaranteed voice quality networks. And so basically your cell phone with no apps, with guaranteed voice quality that the cell phone providers are giving you, can operate exactly like your desk phone. And effectively in our system, it looks exactly the same.
Wow. Wow. You know, we've talked about a lot of subjects today, and I'm just amazed at what you guys have been doing. Like Dan said, what aren't you doing? But we do have a question again from Epony in the chat room. Says, where are you going in 5 years?
Wow.
Where are we going in 5 years? I told you I just flew in this morning and I'm exhausted, right? That's a tough one. I don't know that we – honestly, I don't know that we have a plan that far ahead, and frankly, the industry changes so quickly.
Yes.
I'm not sure. My marketing director just texted me on the side here. I have another screen open and said that we're going to fish concerts or Disneyland. That's where we're going.
Do I get food on this one? I was going to say, I would say I see a lot more integrations in the platform out of the box, sure. A lot more support. There's a lot of interesting technologies. One that more recently came out called the JWT or the Jersion Web Token, which empowers applications to talk to each other and authentication to happen a lot easier. And adding those kind of new technologies to the platform enable us mm-hmm. to integrate and tie into more systems and make it easier for people to use. So a lot of more of those types of things are available to us today, and a lot more will be available to us very soon as they come out.
Very cool. I also wanted to ask a couple technical questions. One is, do you have any kind of speech to text in your setup?
So we can link to outside speech to text programs. We currently have a built-in one, but it's with a provider who's not that great. Okay. We're looking to see if we can open that up, like Carl said, with the integration, so you can actually pick one of several to do it with. The technology sure. is there. We once actually showcased years ago the idea that you could have a speech to text on a conference bridge with each person, because we can separate the audio streams on each caller. So you could potentially sure. have people who speak different languages, and if they're looking at a screen while they're talking, the person that they're talking to would see the translation real time. That was one of the theories of what we might be able to pull off. So there is a lot of possibilities with that, and the base is there. This is where the core is there. We're kind of hoping now people will start taking some of that and come up with creative ideas. Does that make
cool.
sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And have you got Allison Smith to record any prompts for you?
We would be totally down with that. I think the bigger problem is we settled on an actual TTS engine that does all of it. So she'd probably at this point have to try and sound like the TTS engine. I don't know how we'd do that.
Actually, one of the TTS engines actually uses her.
We probably could implement that. And I know that the first team, I think, is switching to her as the default voice. So we could probably follow suit. I'm not particularly tied to one other than I like her. She's nice. So
I met her at Astros conference once. She's very, very friendly. So it was really cool. Yeah. Hey, we're almost out of time. I have one big question to ask and a couple little questions. One is there anything we didn't cover that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
Huh. Just that we're trying really hard to focus more on community engagement, and we've put up a whole new forum, and we've tried to make one of the big hurdles we always had is I think a lot of people decide whether they're going to try an open source project by how easy it is to install it and get it started, and ours was probably the hardest thing to install and get going. So we put a lot of work into making it one or two commands now to get everything running on a single server just to try it out. But we'd love some feedback from people who actually want to kind of be guinea pigs and help us, because when you do this for 8 years, everything seems a lot simpler to you than to someone who's never touched it before, and you kind of forget like where the stumbling blocks are. So we're looking kind of for folks who are who would be interested in doing some user testing, and sort of help us expand the community more. So that's probably the only big thing that I'd love to mention on this is that we've kind of not done a great job with that, and I'd love to do a better job. I don't know if Carl has any other ones.
Carl.
Just that, I'm always interested in what people are doing. If you're willing to share something that you've built off the project or something else like that, or if you have a great idea and you just want to build something as a hobby, you know, reach out to us. We're in IRC. We're all over the place. We love to chat about this kind of stuff. You don't have to be a big guy. You don't have to actually even be running the platform. If you just want to talk, reach out. We are always open to ideas.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Just real quick question that leads to is Docker. You got a Docker version of this?
We do have a Docker version of this. It is rather experimental right now. It's still a bit of a state of flux. The reason is that we tried to deploy the Docker version to create an entire cluster, and some of the auto discovery that would otherwise be required isn't there, and getting through the NAT on a VoIP system on Docker, just exposing a large port range is a bit of a trick. So the Docker isn't necessarily the easiest solution for deployment right now.
Okay.
But we are still working on it, and at some point we do hope to have a very easy, just, you know, download directly from the Docker hub, and you'll have a full cluster up and running with auto discovery and everything else. But it's not quite there yet.
cool. Okay, and two minor final questions. I think I asked you this I wasn't on the show 5 years ago. I was on the show 6 years ago. But what text editor do you spend all your day in, and what's your favorite scripting language?
I was Vim, and then I Emacs for a long time, and I've moved back to Vim because I've been bouncing from system to system. So Emacs isn't always there. It's just convenient.
Oh no!
I know.
I can just hear James. I'm an Eddie in the background crying. Yeah. Like, one of our senior engineers here. But I'm with Vim too. So that's two.
And I've been using Bash to do a lot of my scripts. It's really powerful. Okay. Other than that, Python. But
okay, all right. And
I'm just not winning anything here.
I get teased regularly for continuing to use PHP.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Yeah, whatever. Exactly. I can't win on this show, apparently. It's okay. Hey, guys, it's been wonderful, but we got to let you go because we're out of time. Love the update. Got to keep paying attention to it. And the love that you got in the mobile platform now, it's going to be really awesome. So great to have you both on. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Excellent. Both of you guys. We really appreciate it. It's good to be back. Yeah. And this is awesome.
We'll see you again in 5 years.
Yeah,
you'll be in virtual reality mode and everything else that will go on with that. That'll be awesome.
The ISS.
Yes,
in 3D from the ISS.
All right. Come on, yeah.
We got to go. That was Darren and Carl. Daryl Schreiber and Carl Anderson talking to us about Kazoo at 2600 Hertz and a lot of amazing subjects. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, really interesting. And great guys to talk to as well, and really kind of interesting topics and stuff. I know there was some stuff that we didn't quite get into. A lot of people in the Twitter live chat room are asking about encryption and security. Yeah. As Carl said on there, just come and talk to us. So go and ask them and get over there and ask them in IRC or other things. And I was just going to say that I think Let's Just Talk, or whatever it was Carl said, should be their strap line or their ad thing. Just talk, exactly. I think it was. Just come and talk.
Well, they're all about talking, really. That's the whole point of their company. So, yes, it makes a lot of sense. Like I said, we're up against a hard deadline here. So I got to get through the end of the show, which is we're going to talk about upcoming guests. Next week, we have Hiawatha Web Server, which is a security-focused web server. Aquameta, which is a web dev environment. FriendUp.cloud, which is desktop OS and a browser tab. Oracle Open Source, about Docker image management. CNCF and Packet have gotten together to provide free hosting for open source projects in the cloud. LiveGit2, which is the embeddable Git core. OpenBenchmarking.org, which is benchmarks for all of your favorite softwares. I use software as a plural there. That's really crazy. Anyway, softwares, you know, like multiple software. Bedrock, which is a distributed database built on SQLite. And Crail, which is high performance storage networking. That can all be discovered about our schedule for those at twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for the show. Linked from there is the big spreadsheet, as I like to call it, the big Google spreadsheet, talking about all our upcoming guests. If you have other guests that want to be on this show, if you think you want to have a project on the show, please have the project leader or community coordinator email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. My address is on the homepage for the show. We do a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, usually on Wednesdays. Today it was Thursday because we got bumped at live.twit.tv. We took a number of questions from there, which I always like to say, we always take a number of questions. The number might be zero. So, follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus. I am finally remembering to post to that again. And at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus, and also at Merlin on Twitter. That's MERLYN. I'm going to be at Dragon Con next weekend, actually, of all things. Right after I do this show Wednesday, I'll be doing flying out Thursday morning to Dragon Con. I've got five or six panels I'm going to be on there. I'm doing my Why Google's Dart Should Be Your Next Programming Language talk there. I'm still writing that furiously every day now, trying to get that fleshed out. I'm also going to be at the Open Source Summit in Los Angeles that the Linux Foundation's hosting in about 3 weeks, I think it is. And I'm going to be at the allthingsopen.org conference in the Research Triangle in coming up in, I think, October. I also want to give one a personal shout out. Today's my mom's birthday. So, hi, Mom. Happy birthday. And she was down here for the eclipse on Monday. She came down on the train. She lives about 2 hours north from here. And she came down on the train, and we had a great time together. And that was her birthday present to see the eclipse. I arranged that specially just for her. Yeah, right. anything you want to plug, Dan?
Not really at the moment. I'm not doing any podcasting, but I just want to say a big thank you to you, Randall, and everyone else for being so nice and supportive in the last couple of years, and I hope it won't be 2 years till I get back again. And you can always check out what I'm up to at danlynch.org, which is down at the bottom of the screen for people watching.
Well, Dan, you're welcome back anytime. So I'm very happy to see that you're that you're here. I think that's probably the best way to say that. I'm very happy to have you on this show, especially with your knowledge in this particular area. I mean, that's why I let you ask most of the questions, because you did a great job doing that. And as I think you said in our chat, it's like, you know, it's like riding a bike. You're back doing it. So you're welcome back anytime. So thank you very much for being the host for this show. And I'm out of time. So we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.